KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
Business owners, tell KNON's listeners about your business. You can put your business or event on KNON. KNON currently has space available to run announcements for you. Tell KNON's listeners about your goods, services, nightclub, concert, or event. Help keep the voice of the people on the air while putting your information on the air. KNON's been named the number one radio station in Dallas by both the Dallas Observer and D Magazine. Put your business with Dallas's number one station. Call now for more information at 214-828-9500, extension 227, or extension 233. For more information, go to KNON.org and click on the Run Spots on KNON page. It's a great way for your business to support community radio while letting more people know about you.
Good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and our guest today is Stephen Pace. Stephen Pace is the executive director of AIDS Interfaith Network for the last 14 years. He's done HIV work for 30 years, and he is an ordained MCC pastor. Welcome, Stephen. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here.
You know, I saw Stephen at the AIDS Walk South Dallas several weeks ago, and I said, ooh, can you come on? And he said, ooh, it's, you know, and I had been scheduling people busy. That was a great morning because I got a whole month's worth of guests out of that morning. And the date that I had available was the day before Easter. So this is a work weekend for you.
A little bit of a busy day.
Yeah, I don't get this. With when you're a religious person, you know, you think, oh, it's a holiday. It's not much of a holiday, is it? You're working.
Yes, I'm be working all day tomorrow. But that's good because you know, it's a time of great celebration and for Christianity, and it's a good chance for me to serve. And my HIV work takes up the majority of my life and time, so I volunteer with Metropolitan Community Church of Greater Dallas with Reverend Colleen Dara, and I give the time I have. So, you know, there are moments like Easter when that's it turns into a busy time.
Well, yes. Then thank you for being here, because I know you are busy this weekend. Getting into when you became an ordained minister, I'm sure getting into HIV work was not what you had on your mind. You know, I know a couple of HIV docs who they started off as dermatologists, and all of a sudden people were showing up with Kaposi sarcoma on their skin. They didn't know what it was. And he's become this, you know, he went into dermatology and became a doctor. And I know two like this who ended up dealing with a lot of death. And it wasn't what they had gone to medical school for. They just wanted an easy ride, and they've dedicated their lives. Same thing. How did you go from becoming a pastor into HIV work?
Well, when I came to Texas in the late 70s, came to Dallas, and I had friends who were San Francisco, New York. And so as I came in, I came from business and went into the ministry and social work. And so, but in, as I came into the ministry, coming into the early 80s, then all of a sudden I had friends in other places who were ill. And it was something new, unknown. And so it was first through that, and then here in Dallas, all of a sudden, the same thing started happening. And
there were people here who said, oh, it'll never get here.
It'll never get here, yeah. And it was it was a very scary time. And all of a sudden, like happens in life, something presents and you respond. And so I went on a pastoral call, actually, at Parkland. It was the old Parkland then. And went in, and the person who was there had literally been dumped there, and was near death, and they, at that point, they had him in an isolation room, and you had to put on all kinds of gear to even go in the room. And I knew when I went in that there wasn't anything that I really could do, but it was that defining moment for me. It just says, as I reached out to touch him, take his hand at least, and offer prayer, last rites, something. I knew it was going to be something that was going to be part of my life, and it quickly became that. And so, being one of the few local people who would even go into a room, all of a sudden, again, it presents itself, and you respond, and then it just becomes part of what you do and who you are. And it was that call, if you will. It was that internal thing that pulls you toward it and says, this is yours to do.
Okay, now one thing I have to disagree with you on. You said, you know, you went in knowing there was nothing you could do. You were doing more than most other people were doing by just going into that room and holding the person's hand.
I mean, I remember when Princess Diana kind of did the tour around, and up until then, nobody, no regular people would even touch a person with HIV or leprosy or anything. And she did so around the world, and it changed everything. And here you were early on doing the very thing that everybody else was terrified to do.
They were. And it was scary for me, because at that point in time we didn't know how it was transmitted. Right. But from that first moment I decided, well, you know, I've crossed that bridge, and so whatever happens from here. And frankly, as a gay man, I thought, as my friends began to die, I thought, you're in line. I mean, I had the same life and experience as they did, and assumed, like I think most gay men at that time did, with this would happen to me as well. How it didn't ever happen, I don't know. I don't know why it didn't, but I buried all of my friends during that time period. And so the most common thing I heard, I would go into a room to visit someone and take their hand, and they would say, no one has touched me. And very often the food is sitting in the hall, and the care was just practically non-existent. So they had this enormous thing to try to do, and to try to do something about it. And the ones who could talk to me and could say something to me, especially friends, all said the same thing. Do something. Use your life. Make this your mission. Don't let this happen to us in vain, at least since it's happened. Tell our story and do something about it. And things like the AIDS Memorial Quilt became ways for you to stitch your grief into something active, to make something that made a statement to the world. And now, 25 years later with the quilt, we see those very things happen. And so I had to find a lot of ways to cope with this, but that was the beginning, and that's the passion that for me is still alive, and it's why I still do this work after 32 years, to still try to do something. And it doesn't matter that to me that the population, you know, began to change. The same issue is there, and it's the same thing we look at. It was immediately stigmatized. Stigma is still a big issue. Discrimination is still a big issue. Marginalization is still the kinds of issues that you deal with. And so these are the very things that have helped drive HIV, just as it's moved across all populations and all around the world.
You know, one of the things you mentioned was the quilt, and the last time there was a big display of the quilt, not big, but about 10 panels, was at World AIDS Day at Main Street Garden downtown. Yeah. And most of the people who were there because they're working with an AIDS agency. They know people today with HIV. But I knew, I can't tell you how many of the people on those quilts. And while everybody else is admiring the quilts and the beautiful artistry of them and what wonderful memorials they were, I'm standing there hysterically crying. Yeah. And people saw me. So some people came up to me, and I ended up giving tours of the quilt that day, because I was, and this person was this, and this person was that, and this person did this, and this panel is all of the original Cedar Springs, because there's one panel with all of the original store owners. But it's a way to remember people.
I had a similar experience, because AIDS Interfaith led the collaboration to put that event together, and across the street in the university building, the Parkland's Client Advisory Board had a parallel event with the quilt, and part of the collaboration then was we processed the quilt panels across for the section of the program at Main Street Garden and laid the quilt out then on in the garden as part of the ceremony of that event. So I was one of the last speakers at the University Center, and as I sat down and was waiting to go up and speak, there was a quilt panel in front, suspended on the wall in front. And I knew every name on there and had done more than half of the services for the people represented in those panels. And one hat was a double panel with just basically lists of names, and they were all from here. And it was all panels from local Dallas. So, yeah, the experience sometimes just almost overwhelming. And I'm sitting there trying to take this in, you know, and then to go up and say something meaningful. And my part was to talk about the quilt, and I thought, but that's it, that's the point. These people live on, and their stories get told, and their names are there written to travel around the world and to say to the rest of the world, this is still our issue, this is still so, and we can actively do something, we can actively bring the spread of HIV to an end. It doesn't have to be there, and your name does not have to be up there.
Right.
So
right,
yeah, it was a striking moment.
Mm-hmm. I remember Cleve Jones recounting a story of getting the quilt onto the National Mall and how Nancy Pelosi was instrumental in helping with that, or might have been Dianne Feinstein, too. And they ultimately agreed, but of course this didn't happen, but they agreed, okay, then we'll pick up each panel and turn it every 20 minutes so it doesn't leave, you know, Matt down the grass. You know, as part of one of the agreements, and they're like, okay, then it's okay. You know, of course, they didn't lift every panel every 20 minutes.
40,000 panels.
It's a little bit difficult.
It covered the National Mall. I was there in the mid and late 90s, the last time it was.
It was 97. Here's my story with that. Left my camera, left everything. We just ran because I wanted to see my first partner's panel. So we get up, and all of a sudden, blocked. We can't walk any further. But I'm right up at this gate that they had put up, because there are cross streets in the mall. Get up to that panel, to the blocked walkway, and I'm right at the edge, right across the street. And it's only a two-lane street. Right across the street, two limousines pull up, and out come Al and Tipper and Bill and Hillary, and with them are the five journalists who had their press passes with me. I learned my lesson. You always do everything with your press pass. I couldn't go. They were taking pictures with Bill and Hillary and Alan Tipper. They were just chatting all together. And here I am across the street. My press pass was back in the and my camera, and didn't get a picture. But
I think we actually watched that group happen. I didn't know you at the time, but watched that group happen that day.
Yep. So
that's too funny.
And they just walked down one row of panels, got back in the cars, and off they went.
That the quilt laid out on the National Mall and covering that enormous space was unbelievable.
It's incredible. It's so emotional.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant idea.
I didn't understand the power of the quilt. And you see 10 panels and they're all people you know, and that's one thing. But laid out from the Capitol to the Washington Monument was just, they need to do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course now it would take more than the National Mall to. I don't think the quilt can ever be displayed, all of the quilt at this point in history. But it is still, I think, a very meaningful monument and a very meaningful type of awareness and education and ultimately prevention, because there are very few of those things you can look to that are specifically HIV/AIDS. And it's still one, and I think it still has a powerful message. I know that people, and we struggle with this when you put together an event, you don't want it to all, you want it to be forward moving and keep bringing people forward and give hope and certainly celebrate the successes that have been done. But the quilt helps you, I think, helps all of us remember where you've been and what it's built off of, and that this is what still drives us.
Right.
Such humanity. I mean, each panel, when you look at it, and we think about, you know, our own mortality, it's a full life. you know, it cut short.
It is.
Sadly, so short. Mm-hmm. But these were real people with real stories and people they loved and people who loved them and, you know, lifetimes of achievement. And, you know, you have to take it all in. It's very, very moving. Mm-hmm. That's why they have to put boxes of tissue around it. You know, periodic.
Yeah,
places.
When I'm around, I better put two because I'm going to use one of those boxes.
Yeah.
We're talking to Stephen Pace. He's the executive director of AIDS Interfaith Network. AIDS Interfaith Network's about 25 years old?
26
years old.
26 years.
And does some certain specific things in our community, in the AIDS community, for certain specific people. They have about 2,000 clients. And your biggest program is transportation, which just kind of sounds like, oh, we do trans. Why is that so important? It's a huge program.
Transportation, and particularly for the 2,000 people we serve, they tend to be the people in highest levels of need and lowest incomes. And so in order to access any type of care or service that you need to enter into treatment and care, to sustain your treatment and care, to remain, so you can remain as healthy as possible.
We're talking doctor visits, therapy visits,
counseling, medical treatment, picking up your medications, getting to social services, you know, pursuing your case management, any of that plethora of services that it's going to take, even if it's periodic, you have to be able to get there. And if you do not have transportation, and these folks don't, and you don't always have the funds to do them, because typically we have incomes between zero a month and $700 or $800 is high income for a lot of the people we serve. So the transportation gives you that ability to get there. And all of these other services depend on the fact that the client gets there.
Now, one of the things that's helped in the last few years, DART stops front door of New Parkland, which isn't open yet, but from there you can shuttle over to the old Parkland. That must be a huge relief.
Yeah. Yes, and because our program is three parts, we still have we have a fleet of five vans, and so people who cannot use the DART system, where it's not available to them, or for whatever reason they can't get to DART and use that, still use the vans. But the majority of our clients use the DART bus passes. We're one of DART's larger nonprofit clients, because in a year's time we buy upwards of $400,000 worth of DART bus passes, and then those are distributed at no cost to the clients that are eligible to use them. So they receive a pass at a minimum that gives them 10 days of unlimited rides, and you can use it on the bus system or the train system, so whichever works for you. And if you combine, get as much done in a day, you can ride for the whole day as many times on and off as you need. Mm-hmm. And that does it for most clients. But it's a huge program, and it's expensive to provide.
I mean, one of the things, and we need to take a break in a second, but one of the things that it lets people do is just get to the store to go shopping for food. Without food, you can't live.
Get to the grocery store, go to the food pantries, you know, all of those things that you can. Also, even if people have a little better income, may not have enough income. So you reach those moments in the month where you have a gap. And so the transportation, again, helps you get to where you may fill that gap and to go to a program, say, like our meals program, so you fill in the rest of the month with meals and so on.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. We'll be back talking more to Stephen Pace right after this.
So much pain, we don't know how to be but angry.
Statistics say 1.5 million teenagers experience dating abuse every year.
Only 33% report it.
Let's break the cycle.
Love is not abuse.
If you or someone you know is experiencing teen dating abuse, get help now.
For immediate, confidential assistance, call 866-331-9474 or log on to loveisrespect.org.
You can also text LOVEIS to 77054.
To learn more about what abuse is and the resources available to you, visit loveisnotabuse.com.
You don't have to be afraid.
Call 866-331-9474.
Store the number in your phone for future use.
866-331-9474.
Know how to get help for yourself or someone you know.
is Sonny Boy Mark, and I'd like to take a minute here to tell you about over 60 minutes of great blues listening available now on KNON's Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. This is some great stuff, folks. 15 tracks from the Two Tones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, Johnny Red and the Roosters, the Chris Watson Band, the Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone with Charlie Love, David Millsap, Sir Loin and the Ass Kicking Machine, Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, and JJ and the Detonators. The 1,000 copies we made are selling fast, and we won't reissue it. Get yours now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records and Rewind Music. The CD is available as a download at cdbaby.com. All proceeds benefit KNON, sponsored by Forever Young Records. Vinyl copies available at Forever Young Records only. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit KNON.org. Your ears been bending for some blues? Well, feed them the real thing with Texas Blues Radio Volume 5.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambert Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with late Patty Fink. And our guest today is Stephen Pace. He's the executive director of AIDS Interfaith Network, which serves about 2,000 clients in a number of programs. We're going to get back to what some of those are, but I want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court this week and actually the ruling that comes out tremendously affects people with HIV. Potentially, and let's talk about that. But just talk a little bit about, Patty, the two cases that were heard this week.
Well, I had the great joy of listening to or following all of it on Tuesday, which was my birthday, and I had taken off for this purpose to follow the case and the oral arguments. And the following day, I was less successful because I had other things life hit. Mm-hmm. But the next day was the DOMA case. So right. The first day was Prop 8 on Tuesday. And it was fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating and at times incredibly funny. Because the Chuck Cooper, who was representing the NOMS, National Organization for Marriage and such, for Prop 8, was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It was just a ridiculous argument.
But you know something where I was disappointed? I was expecting Ted Olson to give just some dynamic.
I was disappointed in his delivery.
I was too. It wasn't necessarily his fault. He kept getting interrupted by 9 judges.
Right, but he didn't seem to have a clear path that he intended. He was sort of bouncing around to stuff.
Okay, I'm not the only one who felt that way.
No, then. You're not the only one. Yeah. And there are others who were going, what's going on with Ted Olson? Because they thought it would be this really dynamic.
And especially
spearhead it right through.
If anybody should have been comfortable, he used to be Solicitor General, who's the government's person who presents cases to the court. He's been in that court longer than or more times than just about any other attorney anywhere.
And there should be, like, zero nervousness because he's done it so many times.
So
he knows them all, each and every one.
Sure. So he should have been the one who just went in and, you know, hey, and you would think they would have cut him some slack even because they didn't. They kept interrupting. He'd get one sentence in, but what about this? And another sentence, but what about that?
Right.
I was surprised. But the DOMA presentation was strong.
Oh, the DOMA case, and I thought was so moving, and it was really the love story of Edie Windsor and Thea Speier, mm-hmm. who had been together for 40 years. She's 83, mm-hmm. and her partner and her had married after 40 years in Canada, live in New York State, where marriages are recognized, marriage equality exists, and when Thea passed away from multiple sclerosis after 42 years together. Edie had to pay $363,000 in estate taxes that had Thea been a man, she wouldn't have had to pay. And so it was this great case. You know, there's so many on the far right fringe that were saying, oh, she's just in it for the money, and they have no clue. I mean, that's just a stupid thing to say. But it's one of the many 1,100-plus rights, benefits,
for 10-plus years, I've been saying on the air, the case that's going to win it for us is a
tax case in New York.
And Patty has been saying to me, David, would you please
stop talking about taxes in New York? Well, Damn it all, here we are.
And was I right? As usual.
The landmark case on DOMA.
Right. But it was the perfect case.
It was the perfect case because it was so clear cut. It was like the set number of dollars that was paid unnecessarily simply because the federal government is required by DOMA not to recognize.
And especially this tax, because Republicans call it the death tax. They hate this tax. They hate this tax. But I think they like it. When it comes to lesbians.
Right. They want the
80-year-old lesbians. 80-year-old lesbians can pay this tax. But the rest of, we just hate this. They hate that tax. Stephen.
She came out of the court. I thought this was just so moving. She came out of the court and stood on the steps. Of course, there were thousands of people there in support of her. And she said it went beautifully. And so, you know, she was very happy with the entire way it went. And her personal attorney was the one representing her personally, and it had gone through other organizations and such and representation. But she got a full 30 minutes and was very articulate. Mm-hmm. I thought very, very moving.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Stephen, what I want to talk about here is we're talking about HIV and AIDS today, and if DOMA is struck down, this will specifically help people with HIV, and it will get them financially more stable. How are some of the ways that this can help people with HIV?
Well, for one, HIV is still hugely present and spreading in the gay male population and hugely at risk. And then I think anything that happens that helps knock down identifying groups of people and discriminating against them in this country, particularly, and with laws and protections, begins to help everyone else who's in that. So with the stigmatization of HIV and AIDS, I mean, and there's beyond that, there's so many practical ways as well, because it opens the door for other change that happens and for access to benefits, Social Security. I mean,
Social Security is a big one. Yeah. If you're married, one partner dies, the other partner is the surviving partner is entitled to some benefits that gay people are not entitled to right now.
And it chaps me. I mean, I usually don't linger on the financial issues, but it chaps all of us because we're treated as single people, right. And we pay into Social Security. I get the little notices that show me how long I have to work until I can start getting which level of benefit.
Right.
And I've paid in like every other American who's participating in Social Security, and if something were to happen to me, I can't leave, you know, Aaron can't get that surviving spouse benefit, and that's just not right. She's who I am living my life out with.
But imagine somebody with HIV. You have a couple, they're both living with HIV. Okay. One of the partners dies, and you have a survivor, and that person, you're not in a position where you're not going to survive without that money. I'm talking about people who are served by your agency, Stephen, right. Who really could benefit by that money.
Certainly. I mean, it would help them to have the kinds of resources and financial...
We're talking that they could get food.
That they could literally get food and, so, you know, make their daily lives work and not be so dependent on services like what we provide. And as funding for those services just continues to decrease from government grants particularly, then you see people in greater levels of need. And this would be one way that you could help the situation not to happen for an amount of those folks. It chaps me, because I'm in the same boat you're in, Patty, mm-hmm. that, I mean, my partner and I, my husband now, we were married just last year after 25 years together.
Congratulations.
Thank you, in New York. And we did that to be part of this history and part of the effort to, for us, personally as well, I won't say not, but we wanted to be part of the history in such a distinct way and to help be part of what would bring about change in marriage and bring about for the, because I have to fill out forms and so does Duane to say you're single. You know, I just did my taxes and it's like...
Do you know what bothers me about that more than anything? You're signing and under perjury of the law...
Right.
Under penalty of the law, perjuring yourself,
how are you supposed to answer those? They got you coming and going.
Because that's a lie.
It is a lie.
You're not single. No. You're married.
No, and have been for more than two decades. Mm-hmm. And to be able to claim that is again part of. We should be able to do that like anyone, and that's what I'm hoping that part of the effect of the change is we recognize more and more that love is love and marriage is marriage, and it doesn't matter who it's between. But for people with HIV, it does really begin to open some other doors. And yes, it's a part of it is all about financial, but how do our lives work? Mm-hmm. You cannot, everything costs, and it costs a lot to live, and it costs a lot to maintain. And if you're maintaining your care, especially if both people are diagnosed, you're up against a major obstacle of lifetimes of care and lifetimes of cost. And it's hard enough for those of us who are not HIV positive to know that there comes a time where you may have increasing medical care or just the effects of aging is going to bring some change to your life, and you have to be prepared for that. And Social Security is one of those things that needs to be there and can be there for all of us and should be there, and it should not be.
It's not a special right, because right now it is a special right for heterosexual
restricted
people.
Yeah. Who are married.
Yeah.
People like Annie. let's just stare daggers over across the. No, but it's also not this thing that you haven't paid for already.
Right.
Because you're paying the exact
same. It's like I'd like to stop paying if I'm never going to,
or pay a lower rate.
Yeah.
If you can't access the same benefits as anybody else, well, then why do I have to pay the same amount, the same premiums as everybody?
It's insurance. It's the same with 401ks and all of those other things. Mm-hmm. But I think more than that, and this is what a lot of people I think don't really understand. And we've had Rebecca Covell on recently talking about estate planning and all of that. But when I'm on my moment where I'm going to go meet my maker, and I cannot marry in this country and cannot marry my partner, I do not have that peace of mind, that security in my being, mm-hmm. that my stuff and all the things that we've built a life together, is going to pass to Aaron. I don't have that security, mm-hmm. because there are loopholes right and left. Mm-hmm. You can have all the paperwork. You can have all the stuff. It doesn't give her Social Security benefits. It doesn't even ensure that she'll get the house, per se, that we've both been paying a mortgage on for umpteen years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not – I want to have that moment of peace and security.
Right.
You know what I mean? That it's everything. She's going to be fine. The person I love in the world is going to – be able to carry on.
Sure.
And my example assumes I go first. It could be different, but but
yeah, because we could kill Aaron.
I guess you could. You try all the time.
I do. Now, one thing I do want to object to, she said when she meets her maker. As somebody who is an ordained minister, do you think that's real likely that Patty will ever meet anybody? Let's be honest here.
Whatever you want to believe.
Or not believe. As it is.
It's okay with me, yeah. And that peace of mind, I think, is something we all seek. And I don't think that makes us different.
It doesn't make us different.
In the ways that we're all the same in the world, I think everybody wants that. And
it makes us the same. That's the whole reason for Social Security insurance. Yeah. So that you have peace of mind.
It's called security.
Security.
It's the security,
security
part.
Yeah.
Social security.
And it comes with benefits such as Medicaid or Medicare as well. Those things are linked. And for HIV positive people, the sooner that you can tap into those care benefits is as much of it as the income mm-hmm. is. Because even at the SSI level, if you have Medicaid, it's going to pick up a portion of your care and a portion of your medications. Mm-hmm. And it's critical to paying medications because it's going to actually pay more to medications than Medicare. So, and of course, we don't yet know what all the effects of the National Health Care Plan is going to bring and how Medicaid will be expanded. But Texas doesn't have the best record on Medicaid in the first place. So
it kind of looks like the legislature is leaning toward passing something to expand Medicaid here.
Well, a lot of Republican-led states are changing their minds, and when they do, when they run the numbers,
we're,
and they go,
we're Rick Perry-led,
The smart thing would be to participate and expand Medicare. Medicaid.
Yeah, but we're Rick Perry-led, not Republican-led.
Governor Goodhair.
Huh?
Yeah. Well, before we leave the topic of the Supreme Court stuff,
yeah.
It was my impression, and I think a lot of pundits, that it's likely that the Prop 8 case will only, the ruling will only affect California. And so it's less, it's, I mean, that's the probable path.
I never saw that ruling was going to affect anybody else anyway.
Right, and they always go as narrow as they can. They don't want to make proclamations outside the realm of what they have to address, mm-hmm. the issues presented before the court.
Mm-hmm.
So even if there's a standing issue, then it goes back, it would to the lower courts, it would still just affect only California.
But passing just California, getting same-sex marriage in California, that's 27 million people covered that are
right.
not covered right now. That's
exactly.
Quite
Whereas
a bit.
DOMA, on the other hand, the Defense of Marriage Act, excuse me, Section 3, which says that the federal government cannot recognize our marriage equality, that ruling could potentially affect all of us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It could actually invalidate all of these constitutional bans on right. marriage equality. And certainly in Texas, where we have a super DOMA, where we can't even have civil unions or any sort of recognition, sort of the thing that held up DART this week,
right.
on domestic partnership benefits. But it could potentially overturn all of that, in which case Texas would probably want to leave it on the books for another century mm-hmm. before they take it off. But it would at least invalidate it, right? So I think those are some looks at what we could do.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Stephen Pace. He's the executive director of AIDS Interfaith Network. And we'll be back right after this with more.
Texas are overweight or obese. Did you know that childhood obesity can be a precursor to long-term physical and psychological problems affecting health into adulthood? There are ways you can help your child avoid these issues. The Dallas Area Coalition to Prevent Childhood Obesity promotes healthy lifestyles through physical activity and nutrition. For more information, call 214-944-4212 or the Community Council of Greater Dallas's website at ccgd.org and click on their health page to find out how to help the kids in your life.
This is Kimberly Truex of the GLBT Wedding Expo, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and our guest is Stephen Pace, the executive director of AIDS Interfaith Network. The name AIDS Interfaith Network, a lot of what you do now has nothing to do with religion, but you kept the name. You yourself are an ordained minister with MCC, and but the origin of the organization really was, and you still do have a pastoral care
component
yeah. to what you do.
Yeah, AIDS Interfaith was first formed to reach into the church, religious community, denominations, faith groups, to try to get them to respond to people with HIV, because as it happens with many epidemics or pandemics, in the early beginnings, the church closed its doors to people, and
churches. Which is so ironic.
It truly.
And horrible.
Truly. And at the very moment when the church needs to step up, it often does not, and has to be brought along like everyone else in the world, it seems like. And so AIDS Interfaith was formed first to do that work, and began to do that, and began to make inroads into the faith community, which then also resulted in people stepping forward, even if they could not publicly, and many could not because of the stigma, to say, we can help. Our first volunteer programs were birthed out of those efforts. So we would go in and educate within the church, the pastor or the leaders or the ministers, whoever they were willing to allow for that to happen, and then bring along more education to small groups within those churches who were open to it, or the groups that were open. And so then out of those times, then people would say, and many of them were parents, many of them were family members, or and they could not, would not say at that time that we would even have anything to do with this. They got out of the fear that they would be stigmatized. And as one who is certainly present in that time period, the assumptions that people made, if you had anything to do with it, was one, you were that you had it, and or two, that you were also then now marginalized. Mm-hmm. And so it was a tough thing for people to do, but it was out of that first effort, and we still do some of that work, and we still keep connections to lots of different faith groups, and we don't push and religion on anyone at the organization, because we do a wide range of prevention and direct type services, and we're part of the whole continuum of care that's out there for people with HIV and AIDS in Dallas and the surrounding area. And so people are referred into one or more of our different programs, and it doesn't have, they don't have to have anything to do with religion. If they want to seek it out or work through their spirituality or anything that they'd like to deal with from a spiritual nature, then we also can help connect them to someone in that faith group or their denomination.
Okay, so let's dish. Who are the good churches? Who are the bad ones? Robert Jeffress.
No, can do.
Obviously,
no,
Robert Jeffress has been a very big supporter.
Obviously, but you would be surprised there are some Southern Baptist churches who are open there.
You know, you say you would be surprised. That doesn't surprise me. Mm-hmm. What surprises me are the ones who don't.
Who don't, yeah.
It doesn't surprise me either, but I am pleasantly surprised each time I hear of a new congregation in the Southern Baptist tradition, having now a recovering Southern Baptist, you know, that joins in an effort that recognizes our humanity first and foremost.
Well, HIV, to get into any discussion about HIV and AIDS, they're going to go directly to sexuality, because it's still, the assumption is still there that it's a gay disease in many mainstream circumstances. And if not that,
and it's a gay sex disease.
And it's a gay sex disease, according to. So you have to address all of that from the beginning. And we're also, AIDS Interfaith is also on a national tour. When this country brings people from other countries here, and the federal government brings people here for educational tours, we're often one of the stops, because we're an interfaith organization, and people from other countries, and I get the same questions, you know, well, our religion doesn't allow, you know, for homosexuality or whatever. And so my question is always back to them, to get the discussion going, is if you don't serve them, who does? You know, why do we put our emphasis on the sexuality when that may not have even been the way that it was, that anyone contracted the disease? But secondly, why do we put our emphasis there? Our role and our purpose in any faith, and I think that's universal, is love and compassion and service. And so if we don't serve them, what happens to them? Who serves them? And if everyone closes their door to them, it doesn't take away the need that they have. It doesn't take away, you know, that they're going to still need help. And if you don't help them, who does? And so at least it throws the faith community into a dilemma. And if they can go to that love, compassion, service, as opposed to judgment and exclusion, they can get there.
Yeah, but if you judge people and you exclude them, doesn't that get you into heaven faster?
By some people's definitions and standards, yeah. Yes, but I think overall, religion has come a long way, but every time, every few years, you have it all to do over again, and more churches, you know, swing around, and religion is changing like everything. The mainstream church is changing dramatically, and the traditional, those of us who were brought up in through childhood and on up in religion and go to church on Sunday and all that, that
is in Christian faith,
yeah. That isn't necessarily the way with a lot of Christian faith anymore. And the younger generations, the millennial generation coming on, it's changing. Mm-hmm. And you have to have all kinds of alternative approaches. And the science keeps changing religion. I've changed totally from where I began this journey to where I am now. My faith and my spirituality is so much broader than I ever imagined that it would be. And HIV and AIDS has been a big part of that, because those same questions, you know, came to me. And I wasn't necessarily, I left those kinds of beliefs many years ago and even walked away from religion totally for a time in my life. And I was very surprised to find myself come back to it, but I came back to it with the beginning step was to understand that me as a gay man, that there was nothing wrong with that, and I could reconcile that with my faith. Mm-hmm. And so I've never questioned that since. And that's, and part of working in HIV, I think for me, the faith has always helped me sustain that journey. Mm-hmm. It's a strength in my life.
You know, we were talking, you mentioned the sort of network of services in North Texas, and our listeners may not be aware of it, but they may have heard of AIDS and Faith Network, and you know, you're so identified with the transportation component and have been for many, many years. But there was a time in among agencies who serve people with HIV and AIDS in North Texas, kind of sat down and talked, and how can they better work together, because you really, the same population of people are being served. Right. It's just that all these agencies offer something, a specialization, kind of right. like a focus that they can bring to the care cycle that they right. can really focus on and do well. And everybody can, they can do something well right. and started instead of one group trying to do everything. And so how did that form, and how do people connect with that network of care?
Well, most of us have worked together in that way from the beginning, but then funding, and especially government grants and things like the Rhinebeck Planning Council, bring people together on that level. We work with every other organization on a daily basis at a program level in that type of collaboration. Clients need to be able to draw the services they need, and in Dallas, the system is, it crosses a spectrum of agencies, and you draw down from each of those whatever service or combination of services you need. There is a centralized intake and case management entry in Dallas that is connected to the medical services. Particularly Parkland would have the largest number of clientele because they're the largest capacity in AIDS arms, and then they're going to refer clients into other organizations to draw down the services they need. So we're part of that whole picture, and transportation is a component that then helps clients access all of that range of services, because there is no one agency that can put that together under
right,
one roof. It would be such a ginormous.
And for somebody who doesn't understand, using your transportation, you get people to Nelson Thibodeau right. for their dental care. You get people to the Resource Center for the food pantry. You get people to AIDS Arms for their clinic. You get people to
Parkland,
to
Legacy for counseling or substance mm-hmm. abuse treatment, and legal services. We're interconnected that way, and everything comes
and
together.
And Dallas has been good about not duplicating services. It's not like, right. oh, they have a food pantry, we should do a food pantry too, and maybe ours will be bigger and better, and we can knock them. It was never like that here.
And I think it's been exciting, too, to see all of these agencies who've given decades of service and really built a specialty that they're really good at.
Right.
And you know the community, and you know how to fit your service in.
Right.
And join together so that person who is seeking services or has a question can do one intake process.
Right.
And then it's they don't have to go to each one and start all over.
They don't start at square one at each one. No, the intake follows them, and we each of those, the rest of us as a receiving organization, link onto that. You may have to expand on it, but they're not at zero. So that has helped a lot. And the things that each of us provide, that it's a huge population of clients in Dallas and who come from all race, all ethnicity, all cultures, like we are.
All sexual orientations.
All sexual orientation.
Socioeconomic background.
Socioeconomics. We are 60, almost 63% African American, 19% Hispanic, and everyone else makes up the rest. And on top of the 2,000 people we see in direct services, of those, 27% are women. and they are predominantly African American women. So we do men, women, children, and some youth. And so, but transportation is the largest way that people utilize
one of the programs you do that I think is very interesting is the translation services that you have.
Yeah, we do Spanish language interpretation and translation, and we not only do it for our clients, but we have translated much of the documents that are used throughout all these organizations.
But it's technical translation, really. It's medical translation. Yeah. It's talking to somebody who's just getting a diagnosis and translating it so that they'll understand.
A typical scenario, our interpreter would go to Dallas County Health Department through Early Intervention Clinic, and when they are sitting down to give that person or the people that are with him or her the diagnosis, that information, the interpreter, you're there to pass the language, but you have to know so much, not only about the nuances of the language, but what's being said and how that's coming across.
And how can you do that so compassionately rather than just a straightforward,
because you can't be this non-entity sitting there when somebody's telling this person, you have HIV, I mean, and maybe you have all the way to full-blown AIDS and maybe an advanced stage with it.
Or your child does.
And it's technical and it's emotional, and that so the interpreter has to be
has to understand it, being able to say the names of some of the drugs that are available, because it's not like we're saying, okay, and this is a death sentence anymore. We're saying, and here's what we can do about it. So you have to be able to explain what some of those things
and
are.
And go back over it, because the person sitting there getting that news probably shut down the minute you said HIV or AIDS. And it's the process of helping them come back to even receive the understanding, and then to be linked with them, because they're going to then probably emerge, we're going to see them down the road, so to be part of the linkage of helping them to know what they're getting, what they need, what they're getting, and how to get it, and the language not be a barrier to them as they continue on in the process. And at some point then, hopefully they have enough and they can work it out from there, and then maybe we have occasional contact with them.
Now, how do we pay for all this? One of the ways is Blumenball that's coming up. It's on April 20th?
April 20th, Saturday. It's Blumenball Sowing Seeds of Hope is the whole name of the event. It's our annual fundraiser. It's our largest fundraiser that we directly produce. It's at the Hilton Anatole Hotel starting at 6 o'clock on Saturday, April 20th. It is a three-course sit-down seated meal with wine at the table, and then there's silent auction, there's a small live auction, a service auction, there's entertainment, and the headliners this year are Gary Floyd and Denise Lee, and a cadre of other singers and performers who will be that, but they're headlining it. The hour from 6 to 7 is a cocktail hour with silent auction and live entertainment during that time. And then with the seated dinner, there is a program that runs parallel through the 2 hours of the dinner. And the event closes about 10. So it's affordable. It's $150. And the auction items tend to be in the more affordable range. It's not formal, but dress up like you'd go out in the evening, and whatever that means to you will be okay at the event. That's a way that you can truly help us, because this is our largest source of unrestricted funds, and it supplements part of everything that we do, and really is really necessary for us to survive through the year. And it's a fun, relaxed event with a lot of good there's not a lot of speaking, but we present a program all the way through that really talks about hope and renewal and look forward looking and how, and many people with HIV and AIDS are represented in this in it through video and on stage as well. So,
you know, another program that you have, that it's another way for people to help. And I know at Dallas Voice we did this. The whole company got together. We had a restaurant cater it. It's called Saturday Night Live.
Saturday Night Live at the Dare Center. The Dare Center is our adult day center that originated at Oaklawn Community Services and bears the name of Howie Dare, who was one of the founders of
who lived across the way from me when I first moved to Dallas. I knew Howie back in 1980.
Yeah. And this program, like transportation, was are ones that came from that time period, and we've been in continuous service since the mid and late 80s. Yeah. But it's an adult day center, and it has about four or five components. But SNL at DC is the acronym you'll see. But we get groups, everything from employee groups, small church groups, social organizations will bring a group, and it only takes 6 to 10 people, if that, to put together. And they come in on a Saturday, and they help us set up. They bring the food, they serve the food, they spend time with the people, the clients who come. It could be anywhere from 20 to 100 clients. So, but if you have a small group of 6, 8, or 10 people, it spreads the.
And what we did. After we served, we each sat down at different tables with people. It was just such a nice group. Yeah. And the only time you really knew that any of these people were at all different and had different circumstances, because we were just having nice conversations with people. I mean, that's all it was. Mm-hmm. They were asking to take some home with them because there was plenty left over. Yeah. It was a group of maybe 30 people or so. So we had plenty there. And they were asking because... a lot of them were homeless and really had nothing else to eat. But it was a wonderful evening. I mean, we had so much fun that night. So if any group, call AIDS Interfaith. Yeah. What's your website? AIN.org?
It's AIDSInterfaithNetwork.org.
AIDSInterfaithNetwork.org.
You've got to spell it out, unfortunately.
Spell it out. Okay.
Just spell out the whole name.
And just go there, contact them. It's a wonderful group.
Our main number gets to all of us, yeah.
And I want to thank you for being here with us. Have a happy Easter. I know this is a busy working weekend for you.
Thanks, Stephen. Come back again.
Thank you.
As always.
Appreciate
we were
being
you.
Here.
And... that brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. Thank you for being with us, and we'll be back next week with more.
KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people. Business owners, tell KNON's listeners about your business. You can put your business or event on KNON. KNON currently has space available to run announcements for you. Tell KNON's listeners about your goods, services, nightclub, concert, or event. Help keep the voice of the people on the air while putting your information on the air. KNON's been named the number one radio station in Dallas by both the Dallas Observer and D Magazine. Put your business with Dallas's number one station. Call now for more information at 214-828-9500, extension 227. Or extension 233. For more information, go to KNON.org and click on the Run Spots on KNON page. It's a great way for your business to support community radio while letting more people know about you.